The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
I welcome everybody to the program. We've got a great group in our YouTube chat, and you were also very patient as I worked through the technical problem. And we got a nice group in the Twitch chat as well. Here's the thing. We're going to be talking about ghosts and Bigfoot and UFOs and all of the things that make up what we would call the paranormal world. Because our guest tonight, John Olson, has written a series of books called The Stranger Series, The Stranger Land Series of books. His first one was called Stranger Bridgerland. I think that was the very first. Let me just look here. Yeah, Stranger Bridgerland was the first one with the subtitle True Paranormal Stories from Northern Utah. He's written five books, and each one of these books is focused on either a bigger geographic area or a different geographic area. He has Beyond Stranger Bridgerland. He's got Stranger West. He's got Stranger U.S. And then his newest book, which is what we're going to focus on tonight, is Beyond Stranger U.S. But John has been an author for a long time. He collects stories. He investigates the stories. Hey, Vince, good to see you. He investigates the stories, and he takes that opportunity to share them in his books. And he's got some really great stuff, and we're going to be talking about all of that tonight, which will be a lot of fun. I do want to mention, if you have in the past been a subscriber to our Twitch channel and used your Amazon Prime account to do that, so there's no fee to do that, please jump over to Twitch at some point and renew that subscription using your Amazon Prime account. They only last for a month, and then you have to renew them, and I see a bunch of them have dropped off here, so I'm asking that you do that so we can keep our numbers up over there. We have a lot of great followers on Twitch, and I'm not, you know, super anxious to get people to subscribe. I like the followers just as much, but if you can do that, and because it's your Amazon Prime account and it doesn't cost anything, I'd appreciate it if you take the time to do that for us. Conversely, if you're part of the Twitch family and you haven't found the YouTube channel, it's very easy to find that as well. Just search for JV Johnson's Beyond Paranormal on YouTube. Very easy to find and subscribe there. Of course, there's no fee to do a subscription on YouTube. And YouTube, by the way, has our archive of programs. Twitch does not have the archive, but YouTube does. 700-800 programs there now. I mean, you know, we go back several years with the programs on YouTube. And, you know, there was a time we were doing at least four shows a week, and that's a lot of interviews. We've done a lot. And as you know, I'm now involved in a couple of other programs as well, so we've had to pare these back to a couple a week, and that's what we're doing. So, again, if you could jump over to YouTube and subscribe there as well. And then the third great option for enjoying the show is through our podcast version of the program. That can be found on all major podcast distribution platforms. It's called, Beyond Paranormal? I never remember exactly what we've named everything, because we have to, depending on what shows are already there, we have to be careful about how we name them. So, but it's easy enough to find. You'll be able to find Beyond Paranormal, I think, is the podcast version. By the way, podcast show gets downloaded nearly 10,000 times a day. Thank you so much to all of our podcast listeners. I really appreciate it. And we do have a lot of great support there, too. Folks who click, there's a little support link in the podcast description that allows you to pledge like 99 cents a month or something like that. There are a couple different options, but the entry-level option is 99 cents a month. And when you do the math on that, it's like 10 cents a program or something less than that. It's a little silly. But the folks who do that and support us that way, we greatly appreciate it, because it helps us pay for things like this new equipment that's not working right now, or other things that we're doing, you know, when we put together merchandise and that kind of thing. So thank you for doing that as well. And also thank you to everybody who does the same thing using our Patreon support page, which is, by the way, Joe Haw, J-O-H-A-W on Patreon. Easy to find that as well. All right, I've talked enough. We got our tech problem solved, so we're good there. Let's jump to break right now, and then we will get our guest into the program again. We're talking with John Olson tonight about his latest book, which is the fifth book in the Strangerland book series. It's called Beyond Stranger U.S., and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's JV here. You know I've asked for your support in the past, and I'm going to do it again because it's really, really important. And there are a couple of ways you can support the show, and it's so inexpensive. Now, you can go to Patreon, and you can become a Patreon supporter, and we really, really encourage that. But there's also another way. If you look at the description of the podcast, if you're a podcast listener, and you scroll down to the bottom, there's a way to support the show directly through the podcast app. And it's only 99 cents a month. It's less than a buck. You probably have that change in your couch right now. That dollar a month, less than a dollar, goes a long way in helping us produce this program, provide great interviews for you during the course of the week. I thank you in advance because the support is so important to the program.
All right, welcome back to the show. It's Beyond Reality. Thanks for being here tonight. We've got a great conversation with a guest. I think this might be John's third appearance, maybe more. I'm not entirely sure. He's got five books in the Strangerland series, but John has a new book out called Beyond Stranger US. John Olson is our guest. John, welcome back to the show. Great to have you here. Three times? I can't remember, but you've been on a bunch.
I can't remember if it's three or four or not, but thank you so much for having me back on, JV. I really appreciate it.
Well, I love having you on because you do such a great job with the stories that you've collected and included in all of your books. You're on number five, John. I think I had you on the program when you introduced the first one. Now you've got five. How long of a time span between one and five? How many years has it taken you to do this?
You know what? I've been able to do about one a year, which has been worked out really well. I'm still gathering stories, but I spent a lot of years gathering stories here in Utah. So I have a lot of stories, and I keep gathering stories. So I just hope I can keep going as long as, you know, the stories keep coming in.
I know we've talked about some of this before, but we always have a revolving audience, new people coming in all the time. What was the motivation for you to start assembling these stories and ultimately put them into books?
So I grew up here in northern Utah, in a small town in northern Utah, and the home I grew up in was built in 1883, so it was a really older home. My parents had done a lot of remodeling on it, but, you know, the original part of the house was built back then, so it was over 100 years old when I was a kid, and it wasn't long before I realized, probably about 8 years old, I knew there was something going on in my house that didn't happen at my friend's house. And I had quite a few experiences, me and my siblings, in the house growing up. And what happened was we weren't really allowed to talk about it outside of the house for a long time because my parents were just afraid that people would think we were crazy. Back then, it was not as normal, I guess,
right?
You would say,
yeah,
as it is now. But then, you know, as I got older, and some of my friends, when I was a teenager, had experiences in my house, and I had to admit, you know, that I grew up in a haunted house, and I started telling my stories. Then before long, people started bringing me their stories, and that's how I got started collecting stories and interviewing people.
I have to ask again, because I love to hear you talk about some of the things that were happening when you were a child with you and your parents, or you and your siblings, in the house that you lived in, because that's often how it starts for a lot of people. They're young, they're experiencing some weird things in the house they live in. Some choose to pursue it, some choose to ignore it and move on. What were some of the things that were happening in the house?
So there was all kinds of different things that had happened when I was growing up. I did see apparitions every once in a while. They weren't, you know, happening a lot, but I remember, you know, two or three times seeing full body apparitions. There's a steep staircase that runs from the main floor up to the second floor. And at any time of the day, you could hear either kids running up and down it or heavy footsteps of boots that were going up and down when there was nobody on the stairs. And things would go missing quite a bit. I remember one time, when I was a kid, I had a toy airplane. I had to be maybe 6 or 7 years old. And I was in the kitchen playing with my toy airplane, and I set it on the counter, and I turned around to get a glass of water. And when I turned back around, the plane was gone, but sitting in its place was a cap gun that I'd never seen before.
Mm.
And I picked it up, and I went and showed it to my mom, and it was a heavy, you know, cast cap gun from the 20s, and she just kind of said, well, you know, play with this, I guess, and I was confused because my airplane was missing, and this cap gun was left in its place, and, you know, it would go missing and then come back, and just all kinds of weird things like that happened in the house when I was growing up.
A lot of people spend their whole lives in search of the paranormal, and in specifically in search of a full-bodied apparition. You had a couple of experiences with that as a child. And then this cap gun thing I find interesting, too, only because I don't think you're even allowed to play with cap guns in today's age, political age. You're not allowed to do that. But as kids, we used to play with them all the time. But that's pretty cool, too, because you said it was like from the 20s. So it had to be, it wasn't yours, obviously.
No. And it wasn't the only thing, too. There would be times when toys or objects that, you had in your hand 1 minute were gone the next, and things would show up in the house as well that were from, like I said, the 20s, toys would show up every once in a while and in, mint condition, and then they would, seem to disappear again. It was kind of common place to for example, this is a funny one that happened when I was younger. My brother and I we got up Saturday morning to go watch cartoons in the basement, and as you did when you were, younger, and
yep.
These kids don't understand that you had to get up and watch cartoons on Saturday morning. But my dad had just got a new pair of boots and in the mail, and he was excited to get them laced up. And he's in the kitchen, and he, placed the shoelaces down and turned to get the scissors so he could cut the plastic off of it, and turned back around, and the shoes were there, but the shoelaces were gone. And my dad and me and my brother were the only ones at home at the time. And my dad yells down the stairs for us to bring back the shoelaces. And my brother and I just look at each other like, what's he talking about? And he looked all over the kitchen, couldn't find them. And he finally gave up and then went outside to start, some of the chores on the outside of the house. And laying on the table outside on the front porch was his shoelaces, how they got from the kitchen out there without him seeing or whatever it was. It was really very strange. And that was the kind of things that happened quite a bit when I was growing up in the house.
So do you think in retrospect that whatever was messing around with you, whatever was doing these things, was doing it from a malicious standpoint or more of a playful standpoint?
It definitely was a playful standpoint. There was never anything really malicious or mean-spirited, you could say. Growing up in it, it's interesting. I tell some of these stories, and people ask me, well, weren't you scared to death? Or, weren't you afraid? And I just kind of thought, well, no, growing up in it, it was almost a natural thing that occurred. And as I got more curious, and I found it more exciting than I ever did necessarily frightening. And it's what's interesting is my parents live in that house still today. And as my parents have gotten older, I recently had to move closer to home again to my parents, so my wife and I can help take care of them. And even to today, there are things that go on in the house quite a bit. For example, this is an interesting one. Just the other day, my wife was telling me she had gone to check on my parents, and upstairs on the top of those steep staircase, there's my parents' cats that stay up there, and one that's like really afraid to come downstairs, so they keep food for it and everything upstairs. So she was going upstairs to check on the cats and make sure they had food, and as she looked up the stairs, at the top of the stairs, there was a hand around coming from around the doorway right above the light switch, and she stopped, and it kind of slid around and disappeared. It was a man's hand with a white shirt, and he's been seen before several times. And so she went upstairs wondering who was upstairs, and there was absolutely nobody up there. There's only two rooms, and there's nowhere for anybody to hide. And so even to today, there's things that go on in that house that some people might seem frightening, but I find really fascinating.
Well, I mean, that is very fascinating to see a disembodied hand reaching around or kind of coming around the corner to you. But if you can take it in stride, I suppose if you're used to it and you kind of have come to expect it in that house, you don't get as startled as someone who is completely taken unaware I guess that's a good thing, but the curiosity that it fed for you, it created this interest in not just that kind of paranormal, but obviously your books talk about all sorts of paranormal phenomena. Did you have other things happen as well in that area, or, you know, UFO, Bigfoot, any of that stuff happen to you personally?
Not personally. I have had other experiences, especially in the mountains. I spent a lot of time in the mountains where I grew up. A lot of what I did as a kid growing up was out in the wilderness. And I've had a few experiences where I've come into an area, and one time I was fishing on this small river, and I'm up probably about 7 miles from nowhere. And I walked into this little clearing, and it's a beautiful, sunny spring day. And all of a sudden, it was almost like there was a blanket thrown over me, in the sense that, you know, the sound was muted. I couldn't hear the bugs anymore. I had this, you know, just horrible fear come over me, like there was something in the area that didn't want me there. And the further I went along, the worse it got, until I finally turned and walked up the hill, up the mountain, to get away from whatever this was. And I had that experience. I've had a few other experiences as well, but most of my paranormal stuff that has happened to me was growing up in the house. But it did pique my interest in all areas of the paranormal. So when I collect stories, you know, I don't distinguish. I've gotten UFOs and Bigfoot stories and glitches in the Matrix, you know, all kinds of anything to do with paranormal I've you know, collected and interviewed people about.
And when you started, you remained somewhat focused on Utah itself, right? I mean, that was the first book, and mm-hmm. Because that's where you grew up, and you found plenty of stories just in your general area to fit the bill here. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there is. It seems like the area I grew up in, it's called Cache Valley. It's right near the northern part of Utah. It's a valley that runs north and south. And yeah, as I grew up, you know, and I started doing this when I was 17, interviewing people when they came to me with their stories, or hunting down stories that I heard. There was a lot going on here. There's the Wellsville Mountains that lie to the west have a lot of UFO stories. There's an area towards the east on the Cache National Forest, which has a lot of Bigfoot stories, which I find fascinating, because as I've interviewed people over the years and gathered stories from people who have seen Bigfoot, there's almost, I almost would say, a 7 mile circle that you could draw in the Cache National Forest, where there's quite a few Bigfoot sightings, and yet these people don't know each other and never told each other the stories, never heard these stories, but you could draw a circle, a 5 mile circle, and they all kind of happen within that area. So, yeah, it's fascinating. The whole part of northern Utah is really very paranormally active.
Can I ask you a question that has nothing to do with anything you've written, nothing to do with the paranormal per se, but I'm just very, very curious. You know, we've all been following this story that's gotten national headlines about the murder of Gabby Petito. Weren't they in Utah? And were they somewhere near where you're talking about at all? Do you know?
I know they were in southern Utah, and then they made their way up to Yellowstone, and so if you draw the line through there, then they would have to have come near my area that way as well. And I'm trying to remember exactly the different places that they were at,
yeah.
But they were definitely in southern Utah, and then ended up near Yellowstone, which would have taken them through most of Utah. Yeah, so they could have come through this area pretty easily.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot with that. I was just curious if you'd heard anything, because you're more local to that than I am, certainly being here in New York. So how did you start collecting the stories, John? I mean, you obviously had a lot of kind of what you I would call like local legend, local folklore, that probably fed a lot of the information to you. And then you have some more contemporary experiences, too. How did you start assembling all this, not just for the first book, for all of them, for the most part?
Well, it's interesting because, like I said, by the time I was 17, I was, you know, telling my stories at parties and stuff like that. And I would have people come to me afterwards and say, you know, oh, I had this experience. And so I started, you know, sitting down and interviewing them and writing down these stories. And for a long time, you know, if I heard a story where somebody said, oh, this happened to my uncle, and then I would spend time to try and hunt down that uncle and try and get it so that I could make sure I could get it first person. And I collected for years and years and years. And then about 6 years ago, oddly enough, I got remarried. And my wife, had to kind of explain what all this paperwork and everything that I kept was, and, you know, explain the house that I grew up in and everything like that. And she said, well, what are you going to do with all of these stories? And I'm like, well, you know, I want to write a book someday. And she's like, well, you know, why don't you do it now? And she was such a great influence in helping me and pushing me to do my first book, which, like you said, was mostly stuff that I had collected from northern Utah and some in Idaho. And once I started and wrote that first book and it got out, I ended up getting more people contacting me. And then once, you know, the next book came out, I even had more people contact me. And since the books, you know, they started with Stranger Bridgerland, which Bridgerland is northern Utah and parts of Idaho and Wyoming. And then, you know, it's just grown from there and all the way out to this my last book that just came out. I have a story from Mexico, even. I have a couple stories from Canada. And so it's just kind of grown, which has been great.
As you hear the stories and as you collect these stories, do you ever get a chance to look the people in the eye that are relating the story to you and get a sense from, you know, maybe body language or their eyes, whether or not this is something that either, you know, scared them, or maybe it's even something that you might say, this sounds more like something they had, you know, envisioned in their head. It really didn't happen. Do you get right. that opportunity?
You know, I like to do that. If I can, I'll do it on Skype so that I can, you know, if they're really far away.
Right.
If they're close, I love to, you know, do one-on-one kind of interview like that. But it's interesting that you mention that, because even some of the more, you know, stories that you might seem are fantastical stories that you hear and you're like, wow, that seems really out there. It's interesting because as you talk to the people, a lot of them, they're right back in that place where they were, and you can sense, the fear in their voice and their confusion. And, you know, I a lot of times I have to go off of my feeling of, you know, the story they're telling me and, you know, do I believe what they're saying? But yeah, when I get to interview them and, you know, do it face to face or over Skype and hear the fear in their voice, some of them, and realize that, you know, what they saw, you know, is what they're explaining to me, and that their fear was real at the time. And it still sticks with them. A lot of them, the stories are still with them.
Yeah, those types of stories do tend to leave a mark, and sometimes a mark that never goes away. And the fear, if depending on the circumstances of the experience for the person, sometimes that fear stays with them forever as well. Have you noticed along the way as you're collecting the stories, John, whether there's a geographic concentration of certain types of stories, like, you know, there's a specific area in Utah where there's just a ton of UFO, or a specific area of Idaho where there's a ton of Bigfoot? Or how more of a chronological concentration? In other words, you know, during the period of 93 to 98, there's just so many sudden appearance of UFO stories. Anything, any patterns like that start to show up when you collected these stories?
There are some areas that definitely stick out in my mind, especially with like Bigfoot. When I interview people and they start telling me where it was that they'd seen it. And I'm like, oh, yep, that's within that circle that it's actually near what we call Beaver Mountain, which is a ski resort here in northern Utah. In that area, there's a lot of Bigfoot activity, and there's a lot of things that go on in that area as well. I know that, like, way back in, I'm going to say the early 90s, I remember I had heard some stories about Bigfoot sighting, and that it happened in northern Utah. And what was interesting, when I went and talked to a few people and was able to narrow it down, it was almost like you could follow this Bigfoot that had gone from through northern Utah, through these towns, and then up into Idaho, and then it disappeared. But, you know, for 1 week there were sightings in this one town, and then a week later there were some sightings the next town up, and it kind of followed this path all the way up through Idaho.
Wow! So you could actually track it, you know, like you said, a path that worked its way through the territory.
Right. Exactly. Yep. So in my mind, I'm like, well, it was definitely, you know, a Sasquatch that was traveling through the area, and this is the path that he followed. And it being in the early 90s when it happened, you know, you only had word of mouth. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have a lot of stuff like that. So it was a lot easier to believe that it was, you know, this is the track that it took going through.
There are people that love a good ghost story but don't necessarily believe in ghosts. There are a lot of people that love a good UFO story that don't necessarily believe UFO or alien visitors. Same thing with Bigfoot. Where do you fall in all this? Do you believe in all these phenomena? Not necessarily all the stories, but the phenomena themselves?
You know, I do. I can't go this many years and interview people about their UFO experiences or their Bigfoot experiences and not believe that there's something to it. You know, I definitely, you know, have experience with the ghosts and with that part of the paranormal.
Right.
But like I say, I've interviewed enough people and about all of their experiences that I definitely believe there's something to it. You know, whatever it is, you know, with Bigfoot or UFOs or whatever it is, I definitely believe it, even though in a lot of cases I'd love to see a Bigfoot. That's the one thing I would love to do, and I've spent a lot of time in the wilderness, but there is definitely something to all of it, I believe.
Well, then I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Let's take them one at a time. Let's talk about ghosts for a minute. You've had personal experience. What do you think ghosts are? Some people say, you know, they are the disembodied spirits of people who used to live, no longer live, and have passed on. Some people say that maybe it's a dimensional slip. We're seeing into another dimension. Some people say it's a time slip. Do you have any thoughts on any of those theories? What do you think they are?
In my personal belief, I think that there are, you know, different kinds of hauntings for sure. There are you know, interactive hauntings, which would be, you know, somebody who has passed on from this world that's still staying in the same area, whether it's a home or it's attached to a person, place, or thing, which I believe a lot of ghosts can be attached to. And then there's also residual hauntings. I believe in that as well. Kind of the same thing where I give this example. One of my last houses I had, I could sit on my porch, and I have a big black lab, and even if I don't see that black lab, I know exactly where he walks along the fence every day because it leaves a trail. He leaves a trail. Mm-hmm. And I think that a residual haunting is very similar to that, somebody doing something over and over and over again, and it kind of leaves a mark. I believe that there are, one, interactive ghosts of people who have passed on, and then two, residual things that may happen that don't necessarily seem to react to you, but you're seeing either into the past or something left there. And then I also believe that there are more darker entities out there, whether, you know, you call them demons or whatever you want to call them, that are definitely more negative things that can affect your life. I happen to believe that they have to be kind of invited somehow into your life in order to interact with you. But they're definitely a darker, more sinister thing in at least the ghost realm, so to speak.
When we talk about Bigfoot, some people think flesh and blood. Some people say alien connection. Some say interdimensional traveler. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
Boy, that one I think about a lot, to be quite honest, because I've spent a lot of time in the wilderness, and there was one time that my youngest son and I came across some tracks that were big tracks that had long, stride, and that was the only time that I'd ever come across anything like that, and yet I've interviewed a lot of people who've seen him. So whether it's, I'm just not sure if it's a flesh and blood creature, or if it's more the way the Native Americans think of him as they kind of think of him as a flesh and blood creature, but yet still a creature of the forest and kind of a spirit of the forest, able to come and go as he wants. And so I'm not sure, to be honest, but I would love to know for sure. But it would be hard for one of those to hide, at least here. But you just don't know. I just don't know, to be honest. I know there's something to it, but whether it's a flesh and blood creature or more of a paranormal thing, I'm just not sure.
There has been a lot made recently of the government disclosure, particularly the U.S. military, releasing information and reporting to Congress back in June about their knowledge of their evidence of UFO, or UAP is what they're now calling them, unidentified aerial phenomena. And basically, I think the report left more questions than it did give answers. However, has it changed your opinion at all? Any of this changed your opinion? I'm sure you've seen some of the videos as to what we're seeing in our skies, sometimes at night, sometimes during the day.
I've always, UFOs are also something that's always fascinated me, along with all the other things about the paranormal. I've always kind of had a belief that we're not alone in the universe. And that it's very possible that we're being visited by other civilizations. I remember reading an article from the president of the patent office in 1901, writing to the president to say that they should close the patent office because everything that's been invented has already been invented. And that kind of makes me chuckle, because I think, and I listen to people who, you know, scientists who say, oh, there's no way we can break, you know, the speed of light. There's no way we can do this. And I think back to the, you know, it wasn't that long ago that people believed that man would never fly either. So I just think that there's too much that we don't know in the universe that there's a possibility that somehow other races are able to visit us here on Earth, whether it's interdimensional or whatever. But they're, you know, I believe that we're being visited somehow, and that's what a lot of what we're seeing. Some of it is definitely the military, advanced military stuff, but it would not surprise me at all if the government finally came out and said, yeah, we are in contact with other worlds. It wouldn't shock me. I'll put it that way.
I love that reference to the patent office. I've heard that story before, and I know that to be true. And it's such an innocent look at technology when you see how far we've come in the last 100 years. It's amazing how they thought everything had been invented at that point. And you're so right about things like flight or even getting to the moon, things like that that people thought were impossible. And it makes me think about watching science fiction movies or even science fiction television that really foretold of a lot of the things that we have today, even something like the original Star Trek series. There's so many things in that series that back then seemed impossible, and now we see them as being somewhat realistic or, you know, part of our everyday lives. There's a lot of that.
Yeah, it really is. I remember it wasn't that long ago I was thinking about my grandfather. He was born in 1915, and he's been gone about 20 years now. But I was just thinking about everything that he saw in his lifetime, you know, in the advancements, and just, you know, how much further we will come in my kid's lifetime. You should never say never, that's for sure. When you talk about, you know, advancements in technology, you should never say never.
So the new book is Beyond Stranger US, right? That's the title.
Yep.
Would you say this one's different than the others? And if so, how?
You know what? I really am partial to some of the stories in this one. In the past, I've kind of avoided some of the stories that I've collected about that might seem a little bit darker or a little bit, I'm not sure exactly. The best way I can explain it is, you know, I've gathered a lot of stories in the past of people who have had experiences with Ouija boards, and I happen to have a personal belief that you shouldn't mess with them. It's just, you know, and I didn't want to encourage people to do that.
Yeah.
But one of the stories in it is about this girl and her experience with it. And I was able to write it in a way of kind of a warning, more or less, because of the experience she had. And so there's a little bit more of that in it, coming from kind of a warning standpoint of some of the things that you may not want to mess with. But I just really like this book. There's some really good stories in there that are kind of, I guess you could say scarier. I guess you could put it that way. But there's a lot of stuff in there, like a few time slip stories, UFO, Bigfoot, a lot of what are in my other books for sure. But it may be a little bit darker is all I would say.
You brought up the Ouija board. That often comes up on the program. There are some who feel as though it is, like you said, something that shouldn't be fooled around with. There are others that say it's just a tool like any other, and others that say it's just a parlor game. Have you had stories related to you as you've done your research that indicate to you that, yeah, you need to stay away from an Ouija board? These things have happened. You're the one collecting the stories. Have you heard stuff about this that supports that idea?
Yeah, I have. I've interviewed quite a few people who have had experiences with them, and I know out of everybody that I've interviewed that's had experience with them, there hasn't been anyone that I would say would be a good experience. I kind of explain it, and I respect other people's beliefs as well, and I know I have friends in the paranormal realm that say, oh, you know, it's just a tool, it's like everything else, and I respect their beliefs in that. Just personally, from everybody that I've interviewed, it kind of opens a door, especially to things that you may not want in your home or in your life. The one that is in this book, there was a young woman that talked about her boyfriend talking her into playing with the Ouija board, and he was actually attacked shortly after the session and scratched, and just the whatever it was that came through that was extremely violent to the group that was using the board. And in her experience, she wanted to tell the story from the point of view of, you know, it's best not to mess with kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I remember when I was a kid, my parents had a Ouija board and they used to play it. You know, they'd have friends come over. My parents were only 18 years older than me. They were young when I was born. You know, they were in their late 20s when I was old enough to understand what was going on. And they'd have friends come over. They'd be playing with the Ouija board. And then, you know, me and my friends would play with it. Never thought anything. I have to say, I never had any bad experiences. I scared myself half to death with them. But I didn't have any bad experiences. So I'm kind of on the fence about it. However, I've heard stories like you, John. I've heard people say they've had very bad experiences and they've messed around with it and opened a portal or a door to something that they didn't want to mess with.
Right, right. And I kind of relate it to just picking up a telephone and dialing it at random. You're not really sure who's going to pick up the other side, you know. So I kind of relate it to that. And back to when we were talking about different spirits, whether you're contacting somebody who's dead or even, you know, maybe a more malevolent spirit or something that might be looking for a way in to affect your life. So I generally suggest avoiding it, but that's just from my experience from interviewing people. I've actually never played with one personally just because of the stories that I've heard and things like that. So, but I've also heard not firsthand, but other stories of people who, you know, used it at a party and they thought it was just, you know, nothing happened and it was silly and you just don't know. So
I guess it's similar to any kind of paranormal interaction. It doesn't happen on command necessarily.
Right. Right.
You, collected a lot of stories for this particular book. You said that some of them take a darker approach or darker turn or their darker stories in general. I have to tell you, when I look at the covers, the cover of this one has an eyeball and an alien looking creature. Just the cover itself is a little bit darker, John. Is that intentional?
Yeah, it is. I had that designed by, I contacted this artist and kind of worked with them. I wanted to capture the feeling of, there's a lot of outdoor stories. For some reason, I'm not sure why, but a lot of the stories that I gather are from people who have experiences in the wilderness or out in the woods. Maybe it's just because of the area or who knows. But I kind of wanted to gather that as kind of an eye-catching, no pun intended, because there's an eye on the cover, but and kind of the outdoors and kind of frightening feel. And I think she did an amazing job doing that with the cover.
It is a little spooky, a little creepy. You of all the stories that you got to include in this particular book, is there one that stands out as being one of your favorites?
Yeah. Through the years, one thing that's kind of stood out for me is people who have run into, you've heard of shadow people.
Sure.
And I know you've heard a lot of stories about that. I've interviewed a lot of people who have run into these shadow people in the wilderness. And one story that stands out, it's actually called Hunting Monsters was the name of it. And I interviewed this gentleman a couple years ago after one of my books. He contacted me. And his name's Ed. Actually, it's not. I changed his name. He asked me to change his name for the book, which was fine. He grew up in Montana, went to school, spent time in the military, came home, grew up in an outdoor family like me, hunting and fishing. And he had an experience where him and a good friend of him was hunting deer in Montana, and they were on this hill spotting for deer, doing what's called a spot and stalk, where they would spot the deer and one of them would stalk. And all of a sudden, while they were on the hill, they heard this really weird metallic hum, and they couldn't figure out where the metallic hum was coming from. And it got louder and louder and then disappeared, you know, and they were kind of confused and didn't understand, you know, they kind of brushed it off. And after a while, they spotted a deer that he wanted to hike down to try and get closer to. And his friend Jim stayed on the hill so he could watch and then signal him if he bumped the deer, which is called bumping the deer, if the deer hears you before you get close enough. And so he headed down that way. And as he entered a patch of trees, they were quake and aspen and then a few pine trees. He said as he walked in there, he got a really weird feeling, and all of a sudden the metallic hum started again, and it got really loud. And he said it got dark in the hollow of the trees, almost as if the sun had been covered by a dark cloud. And all of a sudden, behind one of the trees about 30 yards from him, out stepped this thing. And it's interesting, you know, we were talking earlier about when you interview people, and he's still scared to death. This happened many years ago, and he's still scared to death about this. This tall, about 8 foot tall, black figure stepped out from behind the tree into the path. And he said it was an inky black, almost like with a sheen of black all over its body. And almond-shaped red eyes that almost glowed like if you hit, the things on bicycles that you shine your lights on, the cars hit and they glow
red. Yeah, the reflectors.
Red.
Yeah, the reflectors.
Reflectors. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it stepped out, and he said he was very, you know, very specific about his details, that it was a shiny black, had these almond-shaped red eyes, but the fringes on the outside of it were almost like, he said, it was almost like the static of a television. And the hum got louder, and he's scared to death. And all of a sudden, his vision went down to a pinpoint, and he passed out. And he said the next thing he knew is his buddy was trying to, you know, wake him up. He's passed out in the middle of the trail, and he finally comes to, and his buddy helps him over to, you know, this log so he can sit, and he's just fuzzy. He says his whole mind is just fuzzy. Everything's fuzzy. And his buddy had heard the sound again, and then he never showed up. So after about 45 minutes, his friend came down to find him and found him passed out. And he was afraid to tell his friend what he had seen because it just nothing made sense to him about what had just happened to him. And he went years and years before he would go back into the forest. And he had contacted me because he wanted to know if anybody that I knew had any similar experiences. And I talked to him about the shadow people, and I wasn't sure if that was the same thing, because that's the first time I'd heard of anything like this in the daylight, or the eyes were a new thing as well.
Yeah.
And but just listening to him, he was still scared to death. It had been many years since it had happened, and I could just hear in his voice that he was just scared to death. It took until his boys were old enough to hunt and finally talked him into going back into the woods. And his wife had been the only one that he'd shared this experience with other than me. And he made me change a lot of stuff about the area that he was in so that nobody could figure out who he was. But his biggest thing was he wanted to know if anybody else had similar experience. And, you know, I could only share with him what other people had seen with these shadow people, but this one was really kind of strange and out there, and what it was, I still, you know, I wasn't able to tell Ed what it was, and I still don't know, but it's kind of fascinating that something like that exists, and whatever it was that he saw. I know that he went to the doctor the next day to get a full workup because he was afraid that maybe he'd had a stroke or something, yeah. But he was in full health, nothing was wrong, so, and, you know, no mental health issues or anything like that before, but he did suffer a lot of, I guess you would call PTSD after that, and just being afraid to be alone for a long time and nightmares, and so that's a good example. You know, that's one of my favorite ones in this new book, and kind of a strange out there, what is it kind of thing. It fascinates me.
Yeah, that's a fascinating and also very creepy story, and just a couple things about it. Struck me, the eyes is an important one. I haven't heard of too many shadow people with that kind of eyes,
right?
And then the metallic hum, both of those things keep making me think extraterrestrial, alien type,
yeah.
Connection more so than anything, you know, spiritual or shadow person related. I mean, that's kind of where I go with those elements.
Right. Yeah, and we talked a little bit about that as well. Because, like you said, that metallic hum, I've heard before from people who have seen a UFOs up close, that metallic hum kind of a sound. But yeah, and the almond eyes also kind of, you know, turned me that way as well. But it's very strange for sure.
It is. And another thing I was going to ask you, and I wrote this down prior to you even telling that story, is if you'd had anybody report stories about Hat Man sightings or even Slender Man sightings. And we all have there's a bit of a uncertainty about the Slender Man stuff because we know it came from a fabricated source, but yet once it was created, people started to see it. So that makes it interesting in itself. But the story you just told, given the size of this black looking creature figure, it also starts to connect maybe to a Hat Man / Slender Man type experience.
Yeah, there's definitely some of those out there, some strange going-ons. I've interviewed a lot of people who have seen the shadow people. I haven't interviewed anybody who's seen the Hat Man in particular with the shadow creatures. I do find that when I interview people and they see the shadow people in the forests or in the mountains, they seem to be bigger than some of the ones that people see in more of a rural setting or more of a, you know, city setting. I've interviewed people all the way from, you know, seeing just, you know, human size shadow figures to, in one of my books, I talked to a gentleman who saw three, which are associated with what's called watchers, that were nearly 20 feet tall, on a ridgeline watching these boys as they were camping in the Wind River. So I just find it fascinating that for some reason the ones that people are seeing in the wilderness are a lot taller, a lot bigger creatures for some reason. And what they're tied to, I'm not sure. Are they elementals? I'm not sure.
I guess if we had all those answers, we'd have less to talk about, right?
Right,
we knew
exactly.
The answers. I want to ask you about something I saw on your website here. What is this that I'm seeing, Bridgeland Para X Paranormal Expo in October?
Yes. So I'm actually putting that on. It's the Para X. It's here in northern Utah, in Logan, Utah, on October 9th. I have a few people coming in to speak. Shannon LeGros, who's a good friend of mine, she also does books and has a podcast and a bunch of things. She's coming in from Las Vegas to speak. I will be speaking. We're going to have booths there. We're going to have an exhibit of haunted objects. It's going to be just a fun kickoff for Halloween. I've got quite a few speakers coming in, and it's going to be, you know, just really exciting. I'm really excited to be part of it and be putting that on.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. When you get the stories, when people submit stuff to you, do you ever get photos or anything to support? And not that you would require them, but I'm just curious if you ever got anything that you know, was like, oh, wow, look at this. You know, this pretty cool stuff.
I don't. At least not that I can remember any photos from people. Yeah, that's a good question. I actually have not gotten any photos from anybody that I've talked to. A lot of times it seems like some of the people, it's kind of like a surprise thing. They run into the paranormal.
Yeah.
It's an everyday kind of, or not an everyday kind of thing, but they're having a normal day and then all of a sudden they run into the paranormal, which always fascinates me when that happens.
Those are the most interesting stories. It's the people that are not looking for it that have these amazing encounters. I mean, I have to say I'm a little bit jealous because I do go out and look for it. And, you know, the experiences are very rare when they happen. So I get a little jealous when somebody's not looking for it and they have one.
I know. That's me, too. That's me, too. I always like to try and go to the area if it's close enough. When somebody tells me the story and I can kind of get the feel for it. And I'm always hoping that when I go there, I'll have a similar experience, though it usually or hasn't happened yet, but I'm with you on that.
So as we look at the books here, the first one was True Paranormal Stories from Northern Utah, Stranger Bridgeland, and then Beyond Stranger Bridgeland, then Stranger West, Stranger U.S., and this is Beyond Stranger U.S., the last two books, Beyond Stranger U.S., this one, and then Stranger U.S., they encompass stories from the whole country, is that right?
Yeah, they do. Yep, they go all the way out. Stranger U.S. had stories all over the United States. And then this one, the new one, Beyond Stranger U.S., I have stories from all over the United States, and then I have a few from Canada and one from Mexico as well. I had somebody contact me, which was fantastic. I love how, and when I hear stories from different areas, I like to delve in and look at the history, and it's fascinating to me how just the history affects paranormal stories in different areas is really fascinating.
I also imagine that since you've broadened your coverage of stories to the entire country, you probably have an incredibly rich source of these stories. And is your idea here not to rush you in any way, but to continue to cover stories that that will write books that include stories from the entire country? Or are you looking on another more specific geography for your next project?
You know, I think I'm gathering from all over the place. When I get a story, you know, and I interview and I write it down and it goes into, I guess you would call my stack. And then I go through with my wife and we pick stories for the next book. And we go, instead of going off geography, we go off of more of the feel of the story and how well it would fit. And it just happens to keep growing. The geography has just kept growing because of being able to be on, you know, shows like yours, which are on the East Coast, and just reaching more people, which I just absolutely love meeting people from all over with their backgrounds and their fascinating stories about the paranormal. And I just want to keep going like that, wherever that takes me. Someday I'd love to go to another, you know, be able to go to another country even, and in Europe maybe, or wherever, and interview people and get their stories there. As long as it keeps growing, I'll keep going.
One of the reviews of your book series, just to give people an idea of how they're received, This review says absolutely excellent, one of the best ghost monster mystery books I've ever read, and I've read hundreds, even a fascinating time slip story. Brilliant. So people seem to like them, John. People seem to like the books.
Yeah, I've gotten some good reviews on Amazon, and I really appreciate that. When people enjoy the book, I appreciate that they write a review, and that helps me out a great deal. I'm very proud of it. I'm very proud of the work I've done, and I'm glad that people enjoy it. That's what I love about it, is that people seem to enjoy it, that it's entertaining and fun, and it reaches people who have had experiences, and they kind of don't feel alone when they read those, which is good as well.
Well, you should be proud of it. John, where can people buy Beyond Stranger US and actually the whole Strangerland series of books?
You can find them on Amazon. They're on Kindle and on softback as well. You can order them there. I have a few of them that are on Audible. I'm hoping to get all of them on Audible eventually. For those of you that like to listen to books as well. So, definitely on Amazon for them, all of them.
When you put them on Audible, I don't really know how it works. Do you voice them, or does someone else do that?
No, I actually have somebody else that does that.
Gotcha.
I've had a couple different people with much better voices than me do them. So,
well, terrific, John. These are great books. It's so much fun to talk about them. I love hearing about the stories, and I love the fact that you're gathering and researching and bringing these stories together in a place that can be shared easily. We need to keep some type of archive of these things happening. A lot of these stories get lost to time. People don't share the story, and when they're gone, we lose the story, and it's a shame when that happens.
Yeah, it is, and it is great because, like you say, we're living in a time when it's a little bit more open and people can feel a little bit more comfortable. And I always think about all the stories out there that never got told, and the shame that nobody got to hear them. So I'm glad that I'm able to collect them and interview people.
Well, again, I'm glad you are as well, and I'm glad you've agreed to come on the show a few times. We love having you, and when you're ready to release the next one or the next one's out, please get in touch with us. Let us know, because we'd love to have you back.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I love coming on the show, JV.
Thank you, John. Again, the book is called Beyond Stranger US. That's John's newest book, and you can find out more information about all of this and John's work and the event that John was talking about at StrangerBridgerland.com.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by JV Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal, or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y, at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.